Hey, everybody, this is Doug with Emotional Fair Journey. And once again, I have the pleasure to be speaking with psychotherapist David Fetter. David, how are you doing?
Doing fine. I'm just looking out my window here and seeing the leaves falling from the trees and knowing that winter's just around the corner.
Yeah. You know, last weekend here in Ohio, we had, you know, it was the leaves were beautiful and nice warm days, crisp nights, and then a couple days ago we had rain and wind, and it's like all the leaves are down. So
yeah,
I've got a lot of raking to do out in my backyard, I can tell you that.
Yeah, that's I was also watching my neighbor across the street, and that's exactly what she was doing, raking up all the leaves. There's a lot of leaves that fell over the last I'd say week and a half as well here.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, sir. Well, appreciate you joining me again today for a discussion. And our discussion today, we're going to be focusing on shame. And almost every unfaithful person that I've ever spoken to, you know, says about the same thing, you know, that they didn't mean for their affair to happen, you know, but it did. And they cheated on their partner. So now they're gripped with shame over what they did. They just can't stand to feel that way, knowing that they caused their partner so much pain. The feeling is almost paralyzing and overwhelming, and they really don't know how to cope with it. And, you know, so what should they do? So I thought today we'd talk a little bit about shame from the perspective of primarily some unfaithful person, but I'm sure we may touch on some other aspects. But so we're going to begin this conversation about shame. I can't talk. Conversation about shame and some things that people may want to consider doing to relieve themselves of the shame. So with that said, I've got some questions here for you, and let's dive right in. I guess the first question is what exactly is shame, and is it really basically the same thing as guilt?
There are differences between shame and guilt, and you know, so starting with shame, and I think I'll divide it into shame and toxic shame. So shame is defined, or one definition is a feeling of embarrassment or humiliation that arises in relation to the perception of having done something dishonorable, immoral, or improper, and it's associated often with how we think other people see us. So it's based on how, for example, if I've done something that I, you know, myself, I consider improper or hurtful, and I feel judged by it, or I judge myself for it, such as an affair, it would be based on what I think you think of me because of what I've done. Toxic shame is defined as an emotion that can lead to negative emotions, much like shame itself, or in some cases, it can lead to self-harming behaviors or to behaviors that harm others. So it's a very serious serious condition or serious way to feel, because it can lead to some pretty significant and very harmful or negative events or behaviors. One of the ways people suffering from toxic shame feel is that they're unworthy of love, or that they will eventually be rejected by others if they try to connect with them. So in essence, they feel very much alone. And they isolate themselves again because of the way they feel other people see them. So in relationships, some of the issues that can arise as a result of toxic shame would include trouble forming or sustaining friendships or romantic relationships, difficulty being honest in interpersonal relationships, feelings of isolation and loneliness, abusive behavior, or getting into abusive relationships. And that's a whole different discussion. In extreme shame, when we feel, extreme shame or toxic shame, that really needs to be taken seriously, because people feeling that level of shame may, as I said, either hurt themselves or hurt other people, and hence they're really at risk. And other symptoms include not being able to solve their problems or feeling that they're not worthy or of having a better life. So these people, when shame becomes toxic shame, and this is why it really is something that needs to be addressed or ought to be addressed, and people should take it very seriously. When people feel that way, there's a tendency to isolate themselves, because they really are focused on what they think other people think of them.
Gotcha.
So if we move into guilt, guilt is defined as an emotion of morality occurring when a person believes or realizes, accurately or not, that they have compromised their own standards of conduct. Sorry. Guilt is associated with feelings that a person has that they are bad, or that there is something wrong with them or with their character. So with shame, it's, that they feel that other people think they're bad, or they see them in a negative way. But when we feel guilt, we feel we are bad, or there's something significantly defective about us as an individual. So it's not what we did, which is shame. It's who we are, which is guilt.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes sense. All right. Thanks for giving us the difference there. So when someone's experiencing shame, what does it feel like? I mean, is there physical symptoms, or is it more? I mean, can there be depression? What types of things are we looking at?
Well, I think the sort of emotional components of both. I wouldn't say, I would say it's more of an emotional reaction. I wouldn't necessarily say that it manifests in a physical manifestation or physical symptom, other than if when I think about depression, which a person who feels shame may very well, become depressed. There are ways that the depression show up. So, for example, you may notice that you don't sleep as well. Either you have difficulty falling asleep, or you have difficulty staying asleep. So you might feel, physically more fatigued during the day.
Mm-hmm.
Or another symptom of depression would be that if many people who are depressed, they either notice that they're eating more than normal, or they're eating less than normal. So again, if you're eating more than normal or less than normal, you're going to feel a physical sensation and what have you. Or you may notice that your level of concentration is affected. So, and again, not only depression, but I have seen that it, could result in a person feeling more anxious, more anxious mm-hmm. being around people. So, when we're more anxious, we all know what it feels like to be anxious. So I think in those contexts, there would be, you might say there's a physical manifestation,
mm-hmm.
but in and of itself, if you say, well, is there a physical manifestation felt in the body when it comes to experience, for people who experience shame, I would say, well, it's more, I have seen it more related to anxiety and depression.
Okay. And I guess one of the, potential manifestations then too is a potential for self-harm in some instances, I would assume, especially when there's toxic shame.
Well, yeah, but that, like, I would see that as an extension of a very severe depression that the person is feeling. So,
Gotcha.
you know, if they get to that point, and you know, just a note that anybody who's listening who may themselves be feeling that level of shame, or any level of shame for that matter, but certainly when it gets into toxic shame, or they themselves are feeling it, or they know somebody who is feeling that, they should really encourage them to be seeing it, certainly a therapist, but even before that, if it's that imminent, that they should be seeing a doctor.
Okay, great. Thanks for that. I know when I talk to people in our mentoring situation, and I've heard this from both betrayed people and also unfaithful people. There's the thought or the mention that you know, my, let's just say it's a wife who's the betrayed and a husband, and she says, you know, my husband is feels so much shame and everything that if I ever ask him questions or try to bring this up, he just, you know, he freaks out. He can't even talk about it because it's just so damaging to him. So I guess my question is, can the feelings of shame be so intense that a person can, you know, basically paralyzes a person to the extent, you know, that they can't even talk about the affair, much less help in the recovery process?
Well, it's an interesting question, and I don't know that I can honestly say that it's so paralyzing that they cannot talk about it. You know, I mean, I definitely consider shame to be a significant obstacle for an involved partner to participate in a conversation about something that they feel, you know, shame or toxic shame about, just, you know, in particular, when talking about an affair. However, you know, at the same time, I don't think it should be used or accepted as an excuse. I think that, you know, these things need to be talked about. You know, infidelity, betrayal needs to be discussed and processed. You know, because, you know, where would that leave the hurt partner if the involved partner just, you know, basically stayed in this, you know, emotional state where they're not able to talk about whatever the issue is. And you know, but at the same time, I mean, if that kind of situation persists and there is no movement in the conversation about the betrayal, then, you know, again, the hurt partner, you know, would need to, or hopefully be encouraged to, you know, to make decisions that are healthy for them with regards to what to do about the relationship and how to best live their life. But going back to shame, you know, shame needs to be identified when it's present, and the person feeling shame, you know, I feel has a responsibility to process that shame, both for themselves as well as for their partner, so that, you know, so that they're able to own what they did, take responsibility, make amends, and so they can do their own recovery work, for themselves, and they could help and support their spouse, or partner in their recovery work. So when the involved partner is unable to help their partner, or spouse, because they allow themselves to hide behind the wall of shame, they do their spouse, or partner a great disservice. So I have seen, absolutely, you know, I have seen many cases or situations where the involved partner, you know, found it very, very difficult to talk about what they had done because of the shame they feel. But again, you know, I think shame needs to be identified and labeled for what it is. And that person needs, you know, should be encouraged to do what they can to process their shame so that they can move forward both in their own life and in helping the recovery work of their partner or spouse. So, you know, can it make a conversation very difficult? Absolutely. You know, there's a couple that I'm working with right now where The trauma to the involved partner, sorry, the trauma to the hurt partner is so significant and so far-reaching. And her husband really does feel very, very bad, feels a lot of shame about what he did, and has a very difficult time talking about it. But, we're working very, very, slowly with him, and we're trying to break through that shame, in such a way that he's able to see that what he did is part of it doesn't represent all of who he is, and that he can still be accepted as an individual while talking about what he had done and working through that, so that he could then support his wife in her healing, because she needs him to help her move forward.
Right.
But I think that there's another factor. It's not only just the shame. It's also, a lot of these people who find it difficult to talk about whatever it is that they've done and that needs to be processed. These people often have a lot of difficulty getting in touch with themselves and their emotions and communicating, even before the betrayal. So there's a number of factors that need to be considered, but shame certainly would be a significant obstacle that needs to be removed, because it can break down the conversation.
Okay. Well, as a segue, Dan, what are some things a person who's experiencing a high level of shame do to cope or possibly overcome it?
Well, there are a variety of treatments that are proven to be effective in treating shame. Most important is that the person feeling shame talk about what they're feeling, and that they don't keep it in the dark. And one of the great people in the field, both studying shame and treating it, talks about shame flourishing and persisting when it is kept quiet, or when it is kept in the dark. Shame cannot live once it's exposed to other people who are trustworthy and supportive. It's often believed that someone who feels shame will naturally choose to hide their shame and keep it to themselves, live a double life in some instances. But Brené Brown, who says that it needs to be exposed, it needs to be shared, with trustworthy people, it needs to be, talked about, openly, in order to get rid of it. When a person instead lives a double life or keeps it to themselves, it's the opposite of what needs to be done to address shame. So first and foremost, I encourage people who feel shame to connect with a good support system made of people who are good listeners, who are not judgmental and not critical, because that would just shut the person down again. An unhealthy way to deal with shame, as I just said, is to bury or hide it, or even worse, pretend it's not there. So when we do any of those things, we give shame power over us. So a critical piece is to find that, good support system, good friend, who you trust, who's not going to be judgmental, who's not going to be critical, but is going to be honest with you, and is going to be a good listener. So it doesn't mean somebody being just, basically a sponge who's just going to take it in. But I think the best kind of person to talk to is someone, as I say, you trust, not judgmental, but is going to be honest with you, and also encourage you to talk. So instead of giving power to shame by keeping it hidden, as I said, we want to expose the shame by sharing it, and to look at ourselves and to be open to acknowledging our flaws, our needs, and our defects. So we're no longer held hostage by the shame. When we do this, we give ourselves the opportunity to improve not only just how we feel in general, but it also we also have a, you know, often improve our self-esteem and overall sense of well-being. So so separating who we are from what we've done is a good rule to follow. And to do this, you know, we need, you know, considering recognizing that we are human, we all have regrets, because we did something that was very hurtful, devastating, and or traumatizing to the hurt partner. Consider that it may not define who we are. It's a part of what we, it's something we've done, but it may not define who we are, especially if it's an isolated event. We can own what we did and make amends to the person, an honest amends to the person we hurt. And we can learn about ourselves, heal in our recovery, and commit to never repeating what we did again should we be in a similar situation again. So, which is a proper amends. So, you know, by bringing it out, letting it see the light of day, and then doing this other work, is something that, you know, back to your question, someone experiencing high level of shame can do to cope, to overcome it.
Great.
So I just want to add, Doug, that mm-hmm. you know, in all of this, you know, in my view, nobody gets a free pass. The stakes are way too high and too serious mm-hmm. because when we're talking about infidelity and betrayal, innocent people get hurt because of decisions that other people make. You know, they don't know what's going on, and then they're affected by the decision of the involved partner to, you know, have an affair. So people who feel shame, you know, need to be encouraged to be accountable for what they did, and they need to put themselves in situations that allow them to grow, to change, and to be more relational. And something that I consider helpful in making this happen is for the involved partner to keep what they did and who they are separate and apart. The more a person who feels shamed can accept themselves, the less shamed they will feel. So in addition, some effective treatments working through shame include cognitive behavioral therapy, insight-oriented psychotherapies, and self-compassion.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Awesome. So what, you know, in a typical situation then, what can the hurt partner do to perhaps help their the unfaithful person cope with the shame that they're feeling?
Well, I think that's a lot to, you know, to put on the betrayed partner, you know, for asking them to help the involved partner work through their shame. You know, when I see this kind of thing happen in my office very often, you know, the hurt partner is so focused on the involved partner that they do themselves a disservice because they're just so focused on the involved partner that they forget about themselves. So, so I wouldn't want to put that on the hurt partner as an expectation or even, you know, at all. So, you know, but I would say that the one thing that would be helpful is if the hurt partner can avoid shaming the involved partner further. It's not helpful when the hurt partner considers, considers it okay to, you know, what's often called offend from the victim position, which is something that sometimes happens, mostly when the hurt partner wants to seek revenge or hurt the involved partner. Or it can also happen if the involved partner hasn't fully processed the hurt partner hasn't fully processed emotions such as anger, rage, extreme hurt, and so on. So if we're going to ask the hurt partner to do anything, I would say it would be in the area of processing their own emotions so they can, you know, share their pain and needs with the involved partner in a manner that's more productive to both parties and to the process. You know, so not to shame or offend from the victim position, but I feel that you know, it's the responsibility of the involved partner to deal with their own shame.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Okay. Now, I guess final question, you kind of alluded to it a little bit, but what are some things or ways that therapy might be able to help with this whole coping process?
Well, both individual therapy as well as I mentioned earlier, a good non-judgmental support system or support group, or as I said, a good close friend can be very helpful in providing that safe place that I spoke about, where people who feel shame can talk openly about what they've done and what's causing the shame. You know, as mentioned before, speaking openly to others and allowing, you know, so allowing the light to shine on the shameful experience, lessens or reduces the shame and allows people to do the work of recovery. The individual therapy allows people to reduce, to also process and lessen their shame as they dive deeper into learning about themselves as a result of, introspective work, resolution of family of origin issues, and completion of inner child work. And all of this would be done within the individual therapy. By doing this type of work, people can grow from shame into a higher level of health and greater peace with themselves, which is all good stuff. In addition, couples therapy is also often indicated if the couple plans on staying together, and sometimes also if they don't plan on staying together, but let's say there are children and they want to, try to salvage or have at least a workable and supportive co-parenting arrangement if they are deciding not to stay together. In couples work, they can do work so they understand one another better, work towards rebuilding trust, and do the very important work of making amends, and if possible, work towards forgiveness for what has happened. All of this is clearly not only to address shame, but by engaging in the individual therapy, couples therapy, and participating in a good support group, shame can be reduced or resolved, which opens the door for deeper individual and couples work. You know, something that you alluded to in one of your previous questions about, someone if they can't, talk because of shame. You know, all of what I'm talking about now allows for that door to open. And for the couple, to grow both individually, or the individuals to grow individually as well as the couple as part of a healthier coupleship.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, wonderful, David. You provided a lot of great information today on shame. I know I run into it quite a bit, and it's great for me to have that designation or differentiation between shame and guilt. And because I think a lot of people kind of get it confused, and what they think is shame is really actually guilt, and vice versa. So I appreciate you spending the time and sharing all that. Can you?
Well, I think just to reemphasize though that often, and I think I've been guilty of it at times too, and that is talking about, well, I feel shame. Or somebody says, well, I feel shame about what I did, but not really going into it and not really, helping that person through it. And, something that I was reminded of when I was, thinking of doing this, having this talk with you, I was reminded of how serious and how significant shame is. And for anybody who's listening, whether it be if it's the involved partner who's listening, I really encourage you to take it, to take how you're feeling very seriously and do the work to get better. It's important for you and it's important for your spouse or partner, and it's important for your kids. And if it's the hurt partner who's listening, you know, if you have it within yourself, and if you can encourage, you know, your partner or spouse to address their feelings, I would encourage you to do that as well. It's something that should be taken seriously.
Yeah. Right. Well, I think the whole one thing that you'd mentioned in there too about the hurt spouse is the fact that to try to have conversations and discussions about the affair and your relationship, et cetera, without further shaming the person. You know, that's in my experience, and of course you've got far greater experience and a lot more initials behind your name than I do, but you know, it's a very detrimental thing to the whole process to further shame a person, because they just get to the point where they want to give up and not do anything because they don't feel they can do anything right.
Well, that is often the reaction, you know, that we see in our couples, that you know, but that's all, you know, very often I think that is a result of, in that case, the hurt partner just not taking the time or getting the direction that they need to process, you know, the very, very devastating feelings that they have as a result of being betrayed. It takes such a toll on the hurt partner to remain in a state where they're not processing those feelings, and they're not, you know, really working through those feelings. I've had an experience, you know, where I was working with the involved partner, and unfortunately, the hurt partner didn't get any help until it was literally too late, and that poor individual was living in such extreme pain for well over a year before she allowed herself to get into therapy. And by then it was just too late. So, you know, because of the consistent pattern of, you know, what I'll call offending from the victim position. And I understand why, but it was just so devastating, not only to the relationship, but also to her as an individual. You know, when you think about, like, I'm doing a lot of research into the effects on on us as human beings when we remain in a fight or flight situation, and the chemicals that are released in our brain, and how that affects the, you know, the neural pathways and the neurotransmitters and whatever. And it you know, from that perspective, you know, going back to your earlier question about physical manifestations, it's not anything you feel, but it's something that's happening. So it's so critically important to be talking through and getting the help that you need, whether you be the involved partner or the hurt partner, if for nothing else, to take care of yourself. So
right.
I know that I may have gotten a little off topic there, but
No, I agree with that. In fact, I was just having a conversation yesterday with a guy who's the unfaithful partner, and his wife, you know, just refusing to go. She's really suffering, okay? And she's refusing to go and talk to a counselor, therapist, or anybody, because she feels that I'm not the one who did anything wrong. And, you know, I understand that mindset, but then, you know, that's not the point. The point is to get self-care and to help yourself to cope with things and get through this, and maybe just vent to somebody, you know, and you know, help yourself, as opposed to thinking that, you know, you have to fix yourself. So anyway, again, off topic, but it is something that I see come up all the time.
Well, you know, and in that regard, it may be something that's worth, you know, you and I spending, you know, some time talking about and reviewing, because it's something that is felt, you know, obviously in, you know, right across the border. You know, I see it here. You see it where you are, and there's a lot of people suffering as a result of it. And you know, so, you know, that may be something worth talking about.
Absolutely. Well, David, again, I appreciate your time and all your valuable information. And could you please give our listeners an idea how they can get a hold of you if they want to ask any questions or schedule an appointment or whatnot?
Absolutely. Thanks so much for that opportunity. Phone number is 416-315-5107. My email is david@closeconnections.ca. That's closeconnections.ca. I have a website, which is closeconnections.ca as well. So either one of those ways will work. And if anybody wants to reach out, it'd be a pleasure to hear from you.
Fantastic. Appreciate that. And I'm, I would highly recommend, you know, if anybody's on the fence about talking to a therapist or talking to David or whatnot, you know, reach out to him, because the people that I've talked to that have talked with David have nothing but glowing reviews and great things to say about him. So,
that's
anyhow,
really kind. Thank you.
Thought I'd throw that out there. Yep. So, all right, David. You. Well, thank you so much. Have a good rest of October, what's left of it, and we'll talk with you soon.
Thanks so much, Doug. Pleasure.
Take care.